15 Ransom County Council, Victoria Johnson, Assistant Attorney General, Appalachia Council.
You may proceed.
If it pleases the court, my name is Jason Ransom. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, John Chapman. The Commonwealth, myself, and the Court of Appeals agreed with the first part of the analysis that when you're looking at this statute, proximate cause and proximate result are the same thing, and they should be analyzed the same. So I'd ask this court to adopt the reasoning of the Court of Appeals when you look at this statute to determine sole and proximate cause, the same thing as the sole and proximate result of reckless driving conduct. By the General Assembly inserting the terms sole and before proximate.
May I interrupt you? I'm sorry for one second. Judge Russell's very thorough opinion on behalf of the Court of Appeals does not make the word result and cause exact synonyms. As I read it, am I reading it incorrectly?
I don't believe you are. I think the analysis was the way the statute is worded. The appellant's, if the appellant, his reckless driving, if it was the sole and proximate result of the death, then he's found guilty under the statute. My argument was the trial court and the Court of Appeals that you need to analyze it as proximate cause and instead of the way the statute is read, a sole and proximate result. And the Court of Appeals, and I think the Commonwealth, the Attorney General, agreed that you need to look at this as a causation with the result. So I'd ask this court to do the same thing.
Well, I recall a line in that opinion that said something like the cause is what you would look to determine the accident, and the result determines the consequences. And that he has one sentence in there that makes the distinction between the two.
I would argue that under the statute, my client's reckless driving has to be the sole and proximate cause.
Well, I understand that. I'm just pointing out that you started by saying that we should adopt the Court of Appeals' opinion on that first question, that there's really no difference between cause and result. And Justice Kelsey quickly said, well, I think that doesn't state what the Court of Appeals did. And I agree. That's all I'm suggesting. Go ahead.
Yes. By inserting the word sole and for proximate cause, I would argue that the Court of Appeals has changed this analysis from prior holdings to where the Commonwealth must prove not only the proximate cause, but the sole and proximate cause. If you look at all the other statutes that deal with proximate cause, all the Commonwealth has to show is a proximate cause. It could be one of many. And if you have one of many, if you have a proximate cause, the defendant is guilty. But under this statute, I would argue by the insertion of sole and proximate cause, not only must the Commonwealth prove that my client's reckless driving was a proximate cause of the victim's death, but they also have to show it was the sole and proximate cause. If you eliminate sole before proximate,
What was the sole and proximate cause?
Well, the trial court and the Court of Appeals held that my client's reckless driving by falling asleep behind the wheel, going off the road, and causing the death was the sole and proximate cause of the gentleman's death. My argument is, no, it wasn't the sole and proximate cause. The victim wasn't wearing the seatbelt. He was ejected from the car, which caused his death. Now, my client's reckless driving was a proximate cause, but it wasn't the sole cause.
Let me tease out a couple of hypotheticals. So let's say that your client is driving recklessly by speed, 55 mile an hour speed limit, and he's driving 80. So he's charged with reckless driving. And there's a patch of ice. And he skids on the patch of ice, car overturns, passenger is killed. Passenger wearing a seatbelt is killed. Is his speed the sole and proximate cause, or is the ice patch a cause?
In that situation, I would say his speed. If the passenger had a seatbelt on and the passenger still died, I would say he'd be found guilty under the statute.
He would the car would not have lost control. He wouldn't have lost control. The car wouldn't have overturned had it not been for the ice. How can that then? How can speed be the sole and proximate cause?
Well, is car some volitional or negligent or whatever act or inaction, as opposed to an attendant circumstance like a hill or a cliff or a rock or whatever?
Right, and I would say if it's an act of God or it's one of those consequences you're suggesting.
Well, the Court of Appeals talks about that in the opinion.
He would be found guilty under
the cliff would not be a cause because it's just an attendant circumstance.
Correct.
I think is how I may be paraphrasing, but
what I'm interjecting into the statute is if you have a victim who is contributory negligent, the defendant should escape culpability.
So by not putting the seatbelt on, that was the sole and proximate cause. Is that right?
I would say it was a cause, but the statute states clearly that my client's reckless conduct has to be the sole and proximate cause.
Okay, well, what was the sole and proximate cause? A reckless driver runs off the road and kills a guy. What's the sole and proximate cause? Just name something that's the sole and proximate
cause. That would be the sole and proximate cause.
What?
If he drives recklessly, drives off the road and kills somebody, his conduct is the sole and proximate cause.
So if the guy's on the
what? Sorry. Cause of the accident, cause of the death?
It would be both.
You're saying that someone is standing on the side of the road or that someone is the unbelted passenger in the back seat?
Someone standing on the side.
Oh, okay.
And if he shouldn't have been there, if he was drunk and he was standing on the side of the road where he shouldn't have been, and he gets hit by a runaway drunk in a car or a reckless driver in a car, then he's the sole and proximate cause by standing there, just as this victim was the sole and proximate cause by not buckling a seatbelt. Does that make any sense at all to you?
Yes, I think it does. Let's throw this hypothetical out.
Can I just throw this out there?
Yes.
I mean, it seems like to me what you're saying is, in certain instances, there is not a sole cause for the death. I mean, there are several different proximate causes, and you can't discern which one resulted in the death. I mean, isn't that what you're saying?
Yes. If you can point to the defendant's conduct as the sole and proximate cause of death, he's guilty under the statute. But if there's any other causes which cause the death, I don't think he's liable under the statute.
And it almost seems like to me what you're saying is, say for instance in this instance, if the defense brings in an expert to say if he had been seatbelted, he would not have died. The reason why he died is because he was ejected out of the car when it turned. Your claim would be, well, then the accident itself was not the sole and proximate cause of the accident.
Precisely.
It certainly contributed to it, but it was not the sole cause of his death. I'm sorry. So-called.
Precisely. And at the trial court, the medical examiner's report was introduced into evidence, not objected to by the Commonwealth.
So if the victim were a 90-year-old grandfather in the back seat, and a 20-year-old would not have been killed, but the 90-year-old had a heart attack when his head bashed into something, and that would be the sole and proximate cause?
No, the defendant would be guilty under that factual scenario.
Well, I don't know if the eggshell skull theory applies to not buckling up your seatbelt, I don't know why it wouldn't similarly apply logically to a vulnerable victim who, because of a vulnerability completely unrelated to the defendant's conduct, died and would not have died but for that vulnerability.
The difference is the victim in this case chose not to wear a seatbelt. As a consequence, he was ejected from the car. But if you have a victim who is an elderly person and his head hits the seatbelt and his head hits the windshield and he dies due to his elderly age or whatever medical
condition. So you've imported a different thought into it, which really I think is your whole argument. It's the victim's fault. That's really all you're saying by not buckling up.
That's correct.
It almost seems like your argument is akin to a contributory negligence by the victim.
Correct.
Just conceptually. That's not the word. You're cueing off the words, the plain language of the statute. But in effect, that's sort of where it takes us, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
If the victim had worn a seatbelt, but as a result of the tumbling of this car down an embankment, would your argument then be that it was the embankment that was the cause of the accident that resulted in the death?
No, I'd argue.
So this case is entirely about that seatbelt, nothing else?
Yes, and no. This case is about human conduct, human choices. If you have another cause that's an act of God or some natural impediment, like an embankment, the appellant is guilty. But if you have a victim, an actor here, who makes choices that may be ill-advised, and because of that choice, you get this result, then I think the defendant shouldn't be found guilty under this statute. I mean, all the General Assembly had to do was not put soul in there.
Not very well drafted. I will.
It's terribly drafted. All they had to do was proximately cause or caused, and I wouldn't be here. But by inserting those two words, it gives us something to wrangle with.
The chief has at times suggested a statute could be remanded to the General Assembly. But I don't know that we really do that.
I dissent.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Victoria Johnson on behalf of the Commonwealth. Mr. Chapman's conviction should be affirmed in this case because the victim's failure to wear a seatbelt cannot be a proximate cause of his death. It is not the kind of act or omission that in natural unbroken sequence would lead to his death. Something else had to have occurred. In this case, the vehicle crash. Common sense tells us that mere failure to not wear a seatbelt in a back seat does not lead to an individual's death. And that's a very simplistic argument, but I think it kind of goes to the core issue here.
So
what if it would have prevented him from dying as the car is tumbling in over end? Then does it become a cause?
I think that, as I understand the argument, that the defendant is essentially arguing that failure to wear a seatbelt is contributory negligence in this case, that the person could have prevented his own death by wearing a seatbelt. I submit that that's not where the statute falls. The statute requires the Commonwealth to prove the sole and proximate cause. If failure to wear a seatbelt can't even be a cause, a proximate cause, then I think that the analysis breaks down there.
You don't think that failing to wear a seatbelt could be a proximate cause of someone dying in an accident?
Not under the basic definition of what proximate cause is. I had to kind of go back to first principles in this case and look at the definition of what a proximate cause is. And standing alone, failure to wear a seatbelt will not cause someone to die. Now, it could be, and this defendant, you know, I think the evidence showed that this defendant chose to drive when he was revoked and when he was tired and when he knew or should have known that his backseat passenger was not wearing a seatbelt. Instead, he determined to drive and fell asleep behind the wheel. If he had never fallen asleep behind the wheel, there would have been no accident.
Isn't the confusion here the idea that proximate causation in just civil law and tort law presupposes cause in fact?
Yes.
Presupposes but for. You don't even go to proximate causation until you've passed the gateway of but for causation. So, and if you get into proximate causation, then you have to analyze superseding causes versus mere intervening causes.
Right.
And if you back all of that into this language, which refers not to cause at all, but to result, the question now is what could the General Assembly could possibly have meant? And then in this case, could it simply mean that the victim's failure to buckle his seatbelt means that this this tragedy is unaddressed by the reckless driving statute.
I'm not quite sure I caught where the question was there, Justice Kelsey. I apologize. But I think that the statute is very confusing, starting kind of where the Court of Appeals did. This court held in Wagner and in another case, the line of duty case, that the phrase results in does import proximate cause. So we know that the Commonwealth does have to prove proximate cause in this case. And then the question is, what does the word sole mean? The Court of Appeals held that sole in this statute applies the general legal meaning of a sole cause, which is an independent cause that would have created the injury or led to the injury all on its own, an independent, superseding cause. If it comes after the defendant's action, it's a superseding cause. Then the Commonwealth can't prevail unless it is the sole cause.
Would that get to, for instance, suppose a driver is heavily intoxicated, but maybe the passenger is doing something to, steer the wheel or to whatever, some really dumb, dangerous thing. So then you have multiple causation, or you have a driver driving recklessly, but then another driver is also driving recklessly. So then you have multiple causes operating to cause the fatality. Is that what the statute covers? It has to mean something.
Yes, I think that is what the statute covers. I think that if there is some other act or omission that contributes to the accident, which results in the death, then the Commonwealth can't necessarily prevail. However, merely not wearing...
It's not a passive circumstances that leads to heightened damages. It's something that's
completely
causing the accident.
Right.
But in this instance, though, isn't the whole thing that's caused is the damage, the death?
Yes.
That's what you're dealing with.
But without the vehicle accident, the car would have never left the road, or without the defendant's falling asleep, which is reckless driving, the vehicle would have never left the road, it would have never rolled down the hill, and it would have never, the victim would have not died.
Judge Russell's opinion distinguished between factual causes and legal causes, and he quotes our Wagner opinion by pointing out that a legal cause, as opposed to a simple circumstance or factual cause, is a particularly approximate one, is one in which a natural and continuous sequence, unbroken by an efficient intervening causes, produces the event. So how in the world could not buckling up naturally and in continuous sequence and foreseeably produce one's death?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's my argument. This can't be an intervening cause because, based on the record, the failure to wear a seatbelt had to occur before the accident, had to occur when the defendant was driving, before he ran off the road. It can't be a legal cause because it's not something that, that if it continued in a, I beg your pardon, if it continued in an unbroken chain would have caused the victim to die.
But in response to Justice McCullough's question, you distinguished between the embankment, for example, as
yes.
a condition. But you said if there was an act or omission, because his hypothetical was somebody else did something, that's what it applies to. But isn't the failure to wear your seatbelt an act or omission and not a condition? And if that's the case, then you just back right into through the defendant's argument?
Yes, Your Honor, I heard my mistake when I made it. I think that in this case, the victim's failure to wear the seatbelt was an omission by the victim. However, it's not the kind of omission that would lead to his injury or death.
Well, neither would grabbing. I mean, arguably, the act of grabbing a steering wheel is not necessarily an act that would lead to his death either, because if there's other things that would have to happen thereafter. This is one of these things where, I mean, everybody's trying to interpret this statute the way they wish it was written.
Right.
And that's what the problem is. And my colleagues are absolutely right. I have joked from time to time, I wish we could remand the case to the legislature. But we can't.
I would not oppose that remand, Your Honor. This is a difficult statute, and I've struggled with it now for a while, since this is my second go-round with this case. I think that there's two ways to look at the word soul. You can look at it as soul as in only, or soul as in the legal cause. The Court of Appeals, I think, applied the legal definition to the word soul and determined that it meant the only legal cause. Here, the failure to wear the seatbelt was too remote, and the direct cause of this person's death, the person's death result, was a result of the defendant's reckless driving.
But doesn't there have to be a legal overlay? Because the victim got in the car. He wouldn't have died if he hadn't got in the car. That's a factual cause. The victim didn't wear a seatbelt, allegedly. That's a factual cause. But the Court of Appeals said we can't possibly read the statute that way. It can't possibly mean that. It produces incredibly aberrant results and almost bordering on the absurd. It means from a legal perspective, what is the law going to recognize? And how can the law recognize that the failure to buckle your seatbelt means you're not protected by the reckless driving manslaughter statute?
Yes, Your Honor, and I agree with that. I think that would lead to an aberrant cause. And I think that it would also lead to an aberrant effect, looking at the General Assembly's stated intent in other parts of the code. There's, as the Court knows, there's a civil statute that states that failure to wear a seatbelt is not negligence and can't be brought in a civil case. I think that that is an important statute that could inform this Court's analysis, because if the General Assembly has determined that contributory negligence is not a part of civil liability, it seems strange, at least, to determine that a victim in the reckless driving manslaughter statute has to take affirmative steps to protect him or herself, or the defendant will escape criminal liability. If the Court has further questions, I will do my best to answer them. Otherwise, I would rest on my brief.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you wish to have rebuttal?
Yes.
All right. Call the next case.